Welcome back to Accelerando. My name is Paula Tuttle, and today I'm with Mark Trofka at the Pittsburgh Opera. Mark is the director of musical studies and the chorus master, but I know his keyboard skills are required almost daily. In January, he was the harpsichordist in the orchestra and part of the continuo for Handel's Ariodante. And as soon as that finished, he began preparing the Pittsburgh Opera chorus for Il Trovatore, which opens in just a few weeks. Actually, preparation before rehearsals with the chorus began many months ago. And I know it's a fascinating glimpse behind the scenes that we can all see through his eyes. Mark, welcome to the show.
I'm really glad to be here.
So we're doing Il Trovatore next month. I'm so excited. I must say, this must be my favorite Verdi opera. And it's been so long, I don't even remember why. Why do I love this opera?
It's got so many good tunes in it. They're all catchy. This is Verdi at his early peak. The melodies are just captivating. I mean, it's also a kicker of a story, but the music is what really sells it. So this is the real old-fashioned, I love opera, opera.
And I do love this opera. Okay, story. Three sentences. What happens?
Three sentences. That's really rough. Okay. So the story is a lot about this gypsy woman, Azucena. Her mother was burnt at the stake, and she wanted to pass on a curse. And Azucena accidentally put the wrong baby in the fire.
Ouch.
Yep. So the curse didn't really happen, but Azucena raised a child that she says is her son, but we really don't think it's her actual son. The Count lost his brother in infancy, and it's Manrico. This is literally the hardest opera to describe.
Il Trovatore. What I remember about it, there is gypsies. Mm-hmm. That's the one thing I remember. And you said to me just a moment ago that there was a curse that a gypsy put on the wrong baby.
Well, and I should clarify that the curse wasn't put on the wrong baby. She wanted to curse the people who were killing her. But her daughter was Azucena. Azucena was so freaked out that she put the wrong baby in the fire. That's more
all
clear.
Of that just sounds so exciting. What else excites you about this opera? Because I think it's one of the biggest chorus parts.
It's a great chorus show. And I mean, I have to say that the cast itself is going to be a great reason to come and see it. We've got some amazing singers. Alex Lucian as Leonora, John Burton as Manrico, Marianne Cornetti as Azucena, and the Conte di Luna is Lester Lynch. They've all been here before, and they're all amazing singers. And they're the ones that have to sell the story. This was the opera that I was playing as a repetiteur when I found out about the job in Pittsburgh Opera. I was in Southern California, and Marianne Cornetti was singing. There were two Azucenas, and she was one of the Azucenas. I came to Pittsburgh soon after that.
That's cool. So you were doing this opera when you came to Pittsburgh. So you kind of associate Il Trovatore with Pittsburgh.
This is an opera that propelled me through many different changes in my life.
We knew each other at Eastman, which is another,
yeah, another
couple of lifetimes ago.
When I was at Eastman, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I wasn't even a piano major. I was a composer. Then I realized how hard that was, but I loved orchestral music. I loved the sound of voices. I started accompanying singers almost immediately. I started doing that in my undergrad, and I loved it. And that actually became one of my major skill sets, because it's not just playing the piano well, it's also being able to anticipate a singer's needs. And that's been one of my things that kept me hireable.
Do you sing?
I badly.
Chorus master that doesn't sing.
What I often do in the chorus, I sing what I don't want them to do. So I say, don't sing it like this, and then I will do it especially ugly, and then they will know not to do it that way. Mm-hmm. Getting the beauty, I'm not as trained. I hear lots of things in a voice that I can help people find, but I myself cannot do it.
Are you considered a vocal coach?
Yes, that's one of my major skill sets. I learned that by just being in the room with the singers for many years. I helped singers learn music. I know what helps them learn music faster and better, and then I can even help them get it into their voice as efficiently as it possibly can be. So that's what I do for our resident artists here.
So you sort of derive their strengths and you try to work towards those.
These singers that are here are already really talented and really skilled, but the business is such that you need to have the most solid skill set and the most variable options so that you can set yourself up for the most success. Some people will come here with really gorgeous, gorgeous voices, but they need to learn a little bit more about how to be on stage, and we can offer them some help for that. There are some singers who are very smart, but they haven't fully accessed all of their beautiful vocal sound, and we can help them with that as well.
You get pretty good at finding those little things that you can help them nudge up.
Yes.
You're working for many years with talented people. They're usually in a certain age range,
yes,
right?
They're usually between 24 and 30 or 31.
Because the voices, they age like a fine wine. And you get to know what's ready to get pushed at that age.
We tend to be pretty conservative in what we ask them to do, that which is why when we do a show like Trovatore, we don't have our young artists covering all the major roles because they're too young to do that. They could sing maybe one or two of the arias, but in general, we don't have them covering the really big Verdi things. It takes a 40-year-old to really sing this stuff correctly and well.
Let's get back to your coaching, because you have to have some language.
Yes.
You can speak Italian.
Yes, I'm not fluent. I would be able to survive in Italy if you dropped me there. The problem with opera is that the vocabulary that in the operas that I normally do is not real Italian anymore.
That's right.
It's archaic. The phrases that are in my mind that are easy access are totally... It'd be like walking around uttering Shakespearean English, so...
Exactly. I know people that say, I'm pretty good at reading Italian opera especially, but that doesn't mean that you could read Italian. You might not even be able to get through in the subway in Italy, mm-hmm. You know. Okay, so your Italian is very strong. Other languages?
German was the one that was probably going to be close to fluent. I really worked on it when I was younger, and then it fell off. I also loved art song, and a lot of the best art song that I've always loved is in German, not to... throw shade at any other language. I grew up in a Slavic household. My father was Polish, my mother was Carpathian-Rusyn, and I heard a lot of Slavic languages around me. And when I got older, I learned to read Cyrillic, and I learned to hyperanalyze the sound differences between the different Slavic languages. I grew up hearing Polish, and I could sort of pronounce it a little bit when I was young, but I worked on those skills and made them more correct.
Yeah, and as a musician and your language skills, I'm starting to see. I've known you for so long. It makes total sense what you said, that your ear for following a singer is coming together with all of those skills. So we're talking about the job of what a chorus master does. And I don't even know if when you first came to Pittsburgh Opera, was that your main job?
That was not my main job. I was just with the resident artists. I have to say, when I first interviewed for the job, I didn't know whether it was for the chorus master or not. When I did my sort of hard sell to Christopher Hahn, I mentioned that I was also interested in being chorus master, and that was when he told me that that was already taken and I was not under consideration for that. But then he remembered that a few years later.
Isn't that funny how things work out?
I've really learned a lot about myself and a lot about the business, because when people say, oh, you can hire who you want, I can't hire who I want. I can aim it that direction. We have seniority. I have to follow seniority rules that are very specific and very different than AGMA. I still try to get the right blend in sound, because every voice is different. It's a fact. I can't just substitute one person for another.
Right. You can't have like a bunch of sopranos just because they have seniority singing
Trovatore. Yeah. No, you need some men. And in fact, you need a lot more men.
How many men are in the chorus for this show?
For this show, there's 23. There's 40 altogether. There are 17 women and 23 men. The men sing probably 40 minutes worth of music, and the women sing maybe 4 minutes worth of music altogether all night. They're in the anvil scene, which I would say that probably half of the audience would be able to sing the music that the women sing from the anvil scene and Chi del Gitano. Those tunes are in the collective subconscious. That music is not that hard for the women. But the men are in a first scene where there's like a ghost story is being told by Ferrando. He's telling the story of the Count and his missing brother and how scary it is, and it's a lot of Italian flying around that stage.
Tell us what's going on in the Anvil Chorus.
Verdi writes it so that the chorus is playing along while they're singing. We've had so many meetings. In fact, we have a meeting tomorrow about which anvils we're using, what the placement is going to be. There are anvils that came with the set so that they can be hidden in the set and be part of the action. But they sound kind of like iron plates right now, so we're seeing if we have better options.
Trash can lids.
Trash can, I mean, yeah, we're trying to avoid trash can lids. But just the silliest thing, we've spent so much time in meeting time about what goes on backstage. We've sent at least 25 emails about those anvils
okay,
already.
Okay, so anvil meeting tomorrow.
Yeah, anvil meeting tomorrow.
One of the things I loved, I don't remember what it was it one of these concert stage things and you were doing the anvil chorus and somebody out in the audience calls out, "More anvil!"
You know? Because it's like, what's the phrase, more?
Fellas, it was sounding great, but I could have used a little more cowbell.
Cowbell.
More cowbell, yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Which, yes.
So, that's my question. There's more than one anvil.
There are at least two.
There I think there was two. Only, oh, there's two anvils.
They're different pitches.
Ah.
They're because it's that type of percussion instrument, it doesn't actually have a pitch, but you can feel that like the wavelength
right.
frequency is yeah. higher or lower. I'm sure that in big houses they have probably two or three anvils on a part. There's the downbeat and then there's the offbeat, and it goes for as long as that part of the tune goes. Other things to think about what's going on backstage that we've had some meetings about: the trovatore, it's the troubadour, he's a singer, so he sings several things from offstage with a harp. If the set is designed so that he has to be on stage right, because that's where the building that he's supposed to be singing from is, that's where we put the harp. But if in the next scene when he sings again with the harp, it's on the other side of the stage, we have to move the harp. These are things that we're thinking of now, because if we don't, we will get to the theater and not have a plan.
Yeah, and you know, time is money in the theater, and these little corrections can take half an hour.
Yeah.
You know, moving a harp, you know, you have to have the stagehand move it or the harp player and to reset. So this is interesting because it is such a big production.
It is.
I said to Christopher Hahn, "I love Il Trovatore. We haven't done it in so long." And he said, "Expensive." So there's a lot of stuff going on. Tell us a little more about why it's such a big production.
As chorus master, I call myself the canary in the coal mine. I start copying the music for this last summer because I want to have time to edit it and make sure the cuts are right and figure out all that stuff. Then I hire people in late November, December. Then I have to voice everything. Then I have to know if the production requires, there are two groups of men. There are supporters of the Count de Luna and there are supporters of Manrico. In some productions, they're gypsies. If they're on stage at the same time and they have to wear different costumes, I have to know that and I have to know in advance who they are. I fixed that in December. I picked five people who are leaving a group of Count supporters and then they come back on later in that same scene as supporters of Manrico.
In different costumes.
In different costumes. And that's something that I decided in December. That really has to be done. My first year here when we did Billy Budd, there were six different sets of costumes, and each one of them was a different vocal line. So the people wearing the same costumes had to be the same voice type. Now, because we don't build all the costumes for each individual singer, this creates considerations long before anyone is thinking about the show.
What an interesting skill set that is. You have to start thinking about how tall they are.
I love all my choristers for different things, but some of them are good at moving certain ways. Some of them are not. Some of them are exceptionally clever on stage, and some of them are not, but they might be better singers. I mean, everybody brings a different skill set, and I have to try to manage that. And when there are little tiny roles that I can give them, or even there was one production of Bizet's Pearl Fishers, and the women's chorus was divided into two distinct costume parts, but I didn't know that ahead of time. And because they were in different parts of the stage, it affected the balance of the chorus. And if I had known that ahead of time, I would have done some fiddling around with the voicing to make it better. It was good, but it could have been better.
Was it that certain voices were in certain costumes or certain groups?
Certain groups, they were grouped by what costume they fit the best, which makes absolute sense. But then there was too much of one voice on one side of the stage and not enough of the other.
Oh.
You know, like, so ideally you try to mix the sopranos and altos together so that there's a chord coming at you from all parts
right.
of the stage.
Well, so they can blend. You know, I know how stages are. Sometimes it's like a little dead.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they can't tune to each other.
No. If you can't hear, you can't tune. But getting back to the what's complicated about Trovatore, there's offstage singing. The men sing offstage. The women sing offstage. But then the women come on stage right after they've been singing. So I have to know what side of the stage they're singing the offstage music from, and then they're going to be on. Just these little things that you have to know in advance and plan so that the staging rehearsals go smoothly.
And it's an art form because the orchestra stays put.
Mm-hmm.
And it just cuts down on so much rehearsal time. You know, like you think of the ballet dancers, they have to move across, and the singers have to move across.
Mm-hmm.
The orchestra stays in one place. So let's get back to the rehearsal. When they first come in, they all know their scores.
Mm.
They're looking at...
mm.
The choristers all come in, and hopefully they know their parts. Just tell us about how you go from the first rehearsal. How many rehearsals are we talking for the chorus?
I had about 14 hours of music rehearsal with the men. The women got less because they don't have as much. They will have about 12 staging hours of rehearsal in the room where they're staging with the stage director, and then they'll be on stage in the theater for another 10 hours. I start, I have sectionals. I don't see the whole chorus for at least two or three rehearsals when it's this complicated. And I met with the men because they have the bulk of the hardest music. It's very wordy. The sad thing is that they do some of these scenes incredibly well. You probably won't even notice because you'll be listening to the principals who are really ripping the stage apart. And the chorus is the part of the musical texture behind them. You'll only notice them if it's not right. To go back, we separate the men, and then we come together.
Okay, so you're splitting up the group. Are you taking all the basses and all the tenors?
Yes.
So you took the tenors?
Sometimes.
James, doesn't matter?
Yeah.
James is in one room. It's called the Founders Room, and then the GRW, which is the
George Roland White Studio,
where we have the orchestra rehearsals. And so Mark would take one room, and James would take the other. And I just want to add for our listeners that both of you are marvelous pianists. You did the harpsichord part this year for our Aria Dante, our Handel opera, and I've seen James there as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think you're interchangeable.
We all have common skill sets, and then there are some skill sets that we each are better at. I conduct a lot in front of the chorus, and I've done a couple of RA shows, but compared to Glenn's skill set, I'm not even a conductor. You know, I know my way around a rehearsal. I can help the chorus, I know how to manage time. I make a lesson plan like a teacher to get through the things that we need. And I know ahead of time, looking at a piece of music, I know what's going to be hard. So I don't spend time on the easy music.
Right.
When we did Nabucco, I didn't get to the Va Pensiero. I didn't do that for three rehearsals because I knew people would know it. And the other stuff that was really, really hard, I spent the most time on.
So you're a strategist.
A strategist. You have to be.
Because, you know, like I said, time is money, and you have professionals that are coming in. And so it sounds like Il Trovatore is one of the very biggest complicated from the classical era. We've done bigger things like Billy Budd. Maybe that's a little bit further ahead. That's big.
Yeah.
Next year, I think we're doing Flying Dutchman.
Flying Dutchman, which is very complicated.
It's got a big men's chorus, I'll bet.
Yes, and a big women's chorus, too. Everybody's there, five-part women and five men. You know, the more parts you get, the fewer there is on every note, so...
Oh, that's true.
We've got to think about that, too. Sometimes I like to structure a rehearsal so that we can literally do just repetition for rote memory. Uninspiring as that is really the way to memorize stuff like that. You have to do it over and over again. There are some really very sophisticated musicians in the chorus that don't need to do it that way. They have a more structured way of remembering music, but most of the time you have to just kind of get it into their body and then they'll be comfortable when they're staging. The one thing that really has always hurt me is that when people say that singers are dumb because they're up there running around a stage and everything they have is memorized and they're trying to follow a conductor who they sometimes can't see because the monitor may be fuzzy or broken. There are just times when they can't hear, then something that you said before, if they can't hear the voices around them, they can't tune to the voices around
them. And if they're in a dead part of the stage.
And when a singer is singing in their money zone on a high note, they cannot hear anything else. Because, you know, it's like if you've ever screamed, can you hear anything else while you're screaming? No.
No, absolutely not. Yeah, it is quite an experience thinking about what it's like being a chorus member up on the stage. They have to be able to see the maestro. Sometimes they have some extra monitors backstage, but I think that's for when you're conducting your group backstage.
Yes, that's another fun thing about this show is coordinating the backstage sounds with onstage in the pit. Some of the music is written by Verdi, so I can just conduct the backstage and Anthony can follow me. It's just that the transitions when it lines up, because there's an a cappella men's chorus, the Miserere, there's a chime. The chime is going to follow us.
So is the chime in the pit?
I think the chime might be backstage. And then, right as the chorus stops, the tenor and the harp start singing. So at those juncture points between when the men's chorus is singing and then the solo tenor sings, that's when we all have to be at hyper awareness to make sure that the rhythms and things don't collapse. I basically just stare at Anthony. When I was younger, I would have the music on the stand and then I would look down and literally I wouldn't know where he was. It's very crucial as a backstage conductor that you say memorize it. It's usually in 4/4, so even if I forget a word, I can still continue to conduct it. But that contact is crucial, especially when this is, you know, the end of Bel Canto as it's developing into romantic opera. There's rubato. If I'm not looking at him, I don't know what he's doing. So I have to be staring.
I always see him come down long before curtain. He stands on the podium and he conducts because they're doing a little check backstage. Mm-hmm. Because, hey, if two is off screen...
Then, yes, exactly. Another interesting thing about monitors, because we use the Benedum and they have, you know, great facilities. What we've noticed is that the old TVs had a better translation of the beat.
So it was faster, it was more in sync?
It was more in sync.
Then
the new ones are much clearer to look at.
But there's a delay.
Oh, God. I can choose whatever thing I want to lose sleep over, but, you know, together.
Let's hear it for low tech. Obviously, they didn't have the ability to have a camera at all when these were first written. We do have a prompter box that we've
never used one time. Oh.
One time for Pavarotti.
Okay.
And I think it was Mercurio. Stephen Mercurio was in the prompter box, but we never use it. So they would have had some way of being able to see backstage, a hole in the
That's what
curtain,
I theorize, is that if you've got a backstage chorus, there's got to be somebody. And I've done where I'm looking in one direction, but conducting in another.
Right.
Just because of the way things, the traffic patterns and things. We get two nights in the theater where we get to experiment. And something else I think about, I went to look at the set to make sure that it was possible to sing off stage without a mic, because there are some sets that are sound opaque. You can pretend all you want that they can be heard, but if we want that sort of mystical off stage sound, the set has to be constructed in a way that will work.
So if it is off stage, then you have to do a lot of messing around with the mic to make it sound like it's
off stage,
in a different place.
Yes. So it's better, to my mind, if we can possibly do the acoustic sound without miking, so that it has that far away sound, that Doppler, if you will. And there are lots of cloth hanging on that stage, backstage, to dampen a lot of that sound, and that's probably why it's fuzzier and more atmospheric. The set is a lot of hanging goods, which means that there are no hard surfaces preventing the sound getting from offstage onto stage. The set itself is rather raked, which will be good for the principals because that sound bounces out into the house much better. Mm-hmm. And so if there's chorus on there, there will be some. They won't all be on that rake because it's not a full stage.
Mm-hmm. So we're coming up to performance day, and these choristers, they don't just lie around at home and drink water and then show up. You know, any opera singer that's on stage, what do they have? Do they have wigs?
All the principals will be in wigs, and they have regular wig fittings and measurements. Our wig person usually gets here the production week, so that's when he makes the finalized decisions on wigs and which ones they're making.
So we think that the chorus is going to be in wigs too?
I'm pretty sure some of them will be. Another thing that we have to do is we need to notify the men whether they should or can have facial hair.
Right.
And because of this era, they can and should.
Yeah, they have to say, honey, I'm told to grow a beard. Sorry about that, you know?
But
and then there's costumes and makeup.
Yes, each of the choristers has a costume fitting where they have to come in, and it's at least a half an hour, sometimes an hour, with our wardrobe staff, and they fit them in, and they don't make the alterations right then, but they have to make alterations because we rent costume packages from different opera companies and from costume suppliers. And they obviously just don't come fitting. You have to make them fit.
They get the fitting pretty early on.
Yes, they've all been fitted already. There's no time for that. And I'm sure that they've been altering their chorus pieces as we speak.
And then there's makeup.
Makeup. Everything happens for the first time Tuesday before performance. Tuesday's the first night in the theater. The principals are in makeup. The chorus is in costumes, but not makeup. They get makeup and costumes on Wednesday. And then Thursday's the last public rehearsal. So they've been in them once for their fitting. They get them on Tuesday so that they can move around the stage to see what that costume does or doesn't do for them as they're moving around. There are times when if they can't rehearse enough in that costume, it can be a safety hazard.
Absolutely.
They also want to look like people in it. You know, they don't want to walk around worrying about what they look like and how it feels. They just have to get comfortable in it.
Right.
So it's a pretty compressed schedule, and they're all pretty good-willed about it. And some of them, they just love being on stage, and so that's part of the loving to being on stage.
And there's something about putting on a costume. I've heard that it actually changes the way people think when they're on stage. It actually heightens their performance.
Mm-hmm.
No?
They can start being the people that they're supposed to be. The smart directors who come through this company know how to play on the goodwill of our chorus and to play to their strengths, because they can really pull it out that way. They really can. They can make a show, because there are a lot of shows where the chorus is integral and you don't really notice it. But if they were lack energy or lack luster, you would certainly notice something.
I bet this chorus has a lot of pride. You know, especially for this production.
They should. We've worked a lot. I'm looking forward to seeing how it sounds in the theater. And, well, actually in the rehearsal room. The rehearsal room that we use is very live. And everyone sounds like $1 million in there. And so they get comfortable. And then we move to the Benedum and they can't hear themselves again.
The opposite for the orchestra. Mm. We feel, as much as we love the rehearsal space here, you know, and we love the building. You know, it's just a wonderful facility. It really is. But we love getting into the pit, because there's something about the Benedum pit. It's got these curved walls, and it's all wood, and it's warm. And the theater really was set up for opera.
Mm-hmm.
It really was. So we look forward to getting into the pits, and we like getting excited about being with the singers on the stage.
Trovatore is one of Verdi's greatest operas. It's well loved. It's from his middle period, and the music, it's never been matched. The men sing the most alone. They don't sing with the women. 30 minutes of music is completely without the women.
It's amazing.
So that creates a strategy that you have to cooperate with reality that way. And so they've been working really hard on that. And we got the final music rehearsal with Antony, which was this Tuesday. They got it together, and we've still got some buffing to do, but it's starting.
Yeah.
Once again, Il Trovatore at the Benedum Center opens March 25th, with shows on Tuesday the 28th and Friday the 31st, with a matinee on Sunday, April 2nd. This opera features a globally recognized cast, the Pittsburgh Opera Chorus and the Pittsburgh Opera Orchestra, under the direction of Maestro Antony Walker. It's Verdi at his very best. You can leave your anvil at home and watch the Pittsburgh Opera Chorus play the ones on stage. This is the show you've been craving all year. More information at the show notes at accelerandocast.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you at the opera.